NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This
is Mark and Sarah.
Talk about
songs.
It certainly is. We've got one more piece of Do Call It a Comeback content for you.
Yes.
Merry comeback, Miss Listeners. I'm your co-host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am here with the man who's going to explain to you how we're getting even more out of the marrow, out of the bone that is the Do Call It a Comeback season. Mark, what were you thinking with today's topic?
We're squeezing one more drop of blood from the comeback turnip, if you will.
The comeback. So, the comeback turnip. I'm going to need that as a t-shirt. Please submit your drawings on our Discord. Thank you.
I was going to say, if there's anyone out there listening who would like to illustrate the concept of the comeback turnip, we would be grateful to see what you come up with.
Don't call it a root veg. Been here for years.
Don't call it a tuber. It's not a tuba. God. Oh my God, different joke altogether.
It's not a tuba.
We were thinking about how it's always nice to end a season with one fun bonus ep. And I was thinking, you know, a comeback isn't always just a return. Sometimes it's a sassy retort.
Sometimes, you know, it's like a clapback.
That's right, clapback. Oh, you're going to come back at me with that? Yes, I am. So then we started to think about, okay, well, there are comeback songs that are sassy retort songs or answer songs or response records. There are tons of them out there in the world. Famously, of course, Roxanne's Revenge by Roxanne Shanté launched this like massive era of hip hop. So you can go watch the TV movie that was made about that if you'd like. But I thought it would be fun for us to talk about a group of comeback hits in the sassy retort answer record vein. And Sarah, because she's very kind, acted like that was a great idea, and here we are. No, I actually think it is I think it's a fun idea because, you know, why not?
Yeah. So we're talking about seven songs today, and of course we are talking about Sweet Home Alabama. We'll get there. But we are going in alphabetical order, and I think we'll just like reveal the songs that we picked as we go along, because why not?
Why not?
But we worked off of a Wikipedia list of, quote, answer songs, which we will link to it in the show notes. And there was some information in there that I was surprised by, including just how many people were chatting to Neil Young in these songs, like more than just Skinner. So our first song, alphabetically by title, is not one of those, although a Beatles response to Neil Young would be pretty fucking wild, in my opinion, but it's actually Back in the USSR by the Beatles. I did not know that this was an answer song. I think it's really more of an homage type of answer song, but I think it's also like a really good, fun, sexy song with like plain sound effects in it that I've always enjoyed. I pull the clip and here it is.
Well, the Jolly Brave Girls really knocked me out. They leave the West behind. And Moscow girls make me sing and shout. And Georgia's always on my mind.
This song, I mean, that "Oh Come On" is just really sexy to me. I don't know. I'm not a huge White Album guy, but a few of these tracks really cook, and this is one of them. You can hear in this clip both answers. One is to the Beach Boys, which you heard at the top with the lyric, and then I'm less clear on the Chuck Berry influence, but I think it's that guitar break that we also heard. This like the idea that the Beatles would have to answer to any artist is kind of amazing. But the Beatles were, at least earlier in their careers, like quite derivative. They were just extremely good choosers of what to derive from. Like, this was just kind of a skiffle band, and they blew up crazy. So it was fun to think about this in it just from a different angle, and not as, you know, there's always that like automatic reverence surrounding the Beatles that is not, I mean, you know, fine. Like, I like the Beatles. I'm interested by the Beatles more so than my esteemed co-host, but it's also like, there's also a lot of just like bullshit scholarship argo surrounding them sometimes that you're like, sometimes it's just a sexy song about how everything feels when you've had 3 hours of sleep and you're, you know, trying to fuck some bird who's not your wife in first class while your bandmates are like in the room. I mean, I don't know. Like, there's a lot going on in the song and I like it.
I hadn't paid careful attention to this song, obviously, based on some of the things that you just alluded to. So it was fun for me to realize that this song is just a total goof. It's just, I'm going to make a version of a Back in the USA by Chuck Berry with some Beach Boys, California Girls style references, but I'm going to make it about a guy who's delighted to be back in Russia, which was, of course, this was a period of Cold War tension in the world. So it's just sort of funny and silly to be like, oh man, I'm so glad to be among the snow-capped mountains and the farm girls I love. Like, how silly and fun. Why not? I say,
yeah.
And you're so right that so often, I mean, every single Beatles song, someone's like, well, I took a class on this at Harvard, Beatles and the Modern Mythology, and what we learned. And it's just like, yeah, okay, but also this song is just dumb and fun.
Yeah, like he's talking about, you know, some woman wearing nothing but one of those fur hats.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to get in the back of a sleigh and capital D, do it. Until well, we get to the Kremlin. Like, I don't even know what's happening exactly. I don't know why I'm imputing so much fucking to this song, but hey, why not?
Well, there is a lyric near the end of the song where he says, show me around your snow-peaked mountains way down south. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you really need to work that hard to find some good ballin' going on here.
I don't think they're seeing anything about her daddy's farm, but the ceiling of her bedroom. That's all I'm saying.
Hey! Anyway, yeah, total delight. And what a fun reminder, too. Again, as with comebacks in the sense that we meant them in the season, I might have thought, oh, comebacks are this. Mm-hmm. Well, response records are not just angry retorts. They're also funny homages. And why not? I think this is a great choice, and I'm glad that we're kicking off the show with it. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Mark is happy there's a Beatles song on the show. Get your notebooks. Make a note.
I mean, is that because it was first and now we're done talking about it? Could be. You're going to have to wait for the unauthorized biography of Mastass. Next up is another Sarah selection, Circle Game by Joni Mitchell. This is one of her more famous tracks, I think, but it still escaped my knowledge that this was in response to Neil Young's Sugar Mountain. And
yeah,
that was in response to him. Like, he went to this sort of like teen club, and then he turned 20, and that was it. Like, that's the cutoff. Like, if he was playing that club, he could go back, but just as someone hanging out, he wasn't allowed. You can't be 20 on Sugar Mountain. And so the Circle Game is in response to him being like bummed out about getting older in the past at 20 years old, like as a 50-year-old, Neil, shut up. But it's weird. Like, of course they knew each other. Of course they were in that Canadian mid-60s folk scene. Like, of
right.
course her, of course a lot of Joni's material is about having to manage the needs and expectations and like haul the emotional baggage of dudes at the same time that she's trying to do her own artistic shit. Like, that's a huge part of the whole Gordon Spark album for sure.
Right.
But I hadn't, I was not like explicitly aware of this particular story thread in that regard. I do have a clip, and here it is.
We can't return, we can only look behind from where we came and go round and round and round in the circle again. So the years spin by and now the boy is 20. Though his dreams have lost some grandeur coming true, there'll be new dreams, maybe better dreams, and plenty.
I don't know how familiar you were with this song. I wasn't terribly. It's just fascinating to think about, like, you know, Grizzly Sideburns and Dreamcatcher McPoetry meeting up and having this interaction, and that he is just kind of whining about, like, well, I can't go back to this club. And she comes out with this super, like, navy blue idea of, like, the loss of innocence and being trapped yeah. on a thing that's supposed to be fun and for kids, and, like, that the circularity, like, the circle of life is actually a kind of a Dantean trap. And but then with this beautiful vocal that's like, you know, isn't this wonderful and steeped in rue, and it's just really a lot. And then you think about the fact that for a previous generation, 20 was like grown up and you'd be married and maybe have a baby already, whereas for us it's like, oh, you're still a child, you can't drink, right. you can't rent a car, do you shave, did you shave this week, like, anyway, it's really interesting. And I felt kind of bummed out, honestly, after listening to it. Mark?
Yeah, I knew this song because I had Joni Mitchell's Greatest Hits collection that came out in the 90s, and there it was. Mm-hmm. And when I first heard it, I distinctly remember assuming it was from the 19th century and that she had just covered it. There was just yeah. something about the song that sounded yeah. like something that you would have heard on the hills of on the Bavarian hills in 1881.
Yes. Like, while people painted, were shelling peas. Absolutely. Yes.
Aye, mother, the painted ponies are going up and down, aren't they? Aye, it's the circle game. Pass me the patchin. Don't make me keep talking this way, Sarah, because I cannot stop. But it is a lovely song, and it is both possibly saccharine and too much, and beautiful and devastating. So I don't know how it can be both things at once, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I also didn't know that it was in any way a response to a Neil Young song, but of course it makes sense, like you said, that they would know each other. And how funny, like you said too, he's like, I don't get to go hang out with the kid anymore. And then she's like, I never get to be a child again. And so my soul will be trapped forever on the carousel of time.
Yeah. And also, like, knowing now, which nobody did at the time, that she had given up a child for adoption. And
yeah,
that there's all of that sort of.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
All of her childhood angst and trauma and adolescent angst and trauma sort of braided into these lyrics in a way that you're like, oh, like, it's not just the loss of childhood. There's like a lost child.
Whew. So when I was in college, I was in the improv group at my college. And there was a scene I'll never forget where I was doing something with a castmate of mine. Her name was Katie. Her name is Katie. She's still alive. And she closed by singing this song, and it was so funny. I can't remember the context, but I happened to know the words. So we were able to sing a duet of the circle game at the end. And I just remember, I do not remember what the sketch was, but I remember it brought the house down. And afterwards, Katie told me that she had learned that song because she was at camp and people sang it around the campfire, like the counselor strumming the guitar.
Oh,
and I
sure.
thought, that is exactly right. Someone draped in macrame, strumming a guitar, mm-hmm. singing this around a campfire with a bunch of children who don't understand the complexity of what they're singing, but who cares? Perfect.
Well, yeah, you're so right that this does have this like 19th century feel of like a literal circle game that was played with like a broom and people jumping over it because cable television hadn't been invented. And you're like, sure, circle game. Sounds fun, Mrs. Ingalls.
They named it like Mrs. Gunter. And you're like, she's the mascot of the village.
Oh, God. She's a witch.
No, Laura. I saw you going and speaking to Mrs. Gunter behind the barn, and you done the devil thing, didn't ya?
She lives in the crook of a tree.
You know what? She made me sign my name on her black broomy book. You played the circle game into the seventh circle of hell, you have.
Also, according to this podcast, Bavaria is in Ireland.
I know.
So many new facts to share and enjoy on Marcus. Did you talk about songs.
Did you know that Dawn from En Vogue actually insisted that Bavaria be relocated to Ireland before she would work on the group's second album?
Another little known hashtag Dawn fact. It's actually her turn to cry, and she took Leslie Gore to court over this.
Yeah, they're still in litigation, even though Leslie Gore is dead. This one, Judy's Turn to Cry by Leslie Gore, is one that I have brought into the room today. Judy's Turn to Cry, though performed by Leslie Gore, is also an answer record to It's My Party, also performed by Leslie Gore. I think that is just so interesting and fun and weird. And I also just recently wrote about this song on my newsletter, The Lost Songs Project, which you can find on Substack. But Judy's Turn to Cry is, well, let me back up. For those of you who don't know, It's My Party is the classic song about a very melodramatic teenage diva who at her birthday party sees her boyfriend making out with another girl named Judy. And so the lead singer of the song, we'll call her Leslie for these purposes, Leslie realizes the best way to control the situation is to have a public meltdown about it. So she goes over the top and It's My Party and she says, play all my records, keep dancing all night, just leave me alone for a while. And she basically runs into the bedroom and slams the door, and it's just perfect. It's just
queen shit.
It's just like, let's have a nuclear war about the fact that this dumb boy and this dumb girl kissed at my party. And then in Judy's Turn to Cry, the very next single that Leslie Gore released, here's what happens. Leslie kisses another boy at the party, making sure that Johnny can see it. Then Johnny goes and punches that boy out, which then makes the party realize that Johnny still loves Leslie, and then Judy feels sad. And so then Leslie wins. And the song makes you realize that it isn't about the boy, it's about power, and Leslie will get it. And I just think this is brilliant. And if someone else had performed this song as a response record, great, fine. But the fact that Leslie Gore did it, amazing. Here's a clip from Judy's Turn to Cry.
What a little twat, man.
I know.
What a smug, whiny, just bitch. And having gone to girls' school for 12 years in a row, this is a documentary, this shit. Like, aurally, musically, I don't especially care for, especially Judy's Turn to Cry, but I have to give credit to, first of all, like, there is no vanity to this, and she's just like almost literally like, nee, 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 nee. Like, oh wow, settled the fuck down. But also, like, being a 15 year old girl, that's how that looks. And as you astutely noted, on the Lost Songs Project. And of course, we will link to this coverage in the show notes. But it's there's like that extra layer of Leslie really trying to get Judy's attention and just be like, I have power over you. Now let's you and I go and, you know, the guest
let's
room
go make out.
Because yes. I don't really care about fucking stupid Johnny, which word. Correct choice. But there's just something about the vocals on both these songs that is like whiny and smug and perfect. Like, is it a super pleasurable listening experience? No, but Judy's Turn to Cry is a total earwig, A, and B, it's absolutely perfect marriage of tone and content, and it's great. I loved thinking about this and just admiring this tiny, horrible queen who just burned down her entire party over the course of two songs.
Yes.
Epic.
She seriously destroyed her own party. It was so that she could stand triumphant in the ashes.
Mm-hmm. And as you also pointed out, this all happens in total under 5 minutes.
Yeah. The two songs together are less than 5 minutes long. And yet you get the rise and fall of Judy and Leslie standing proudly over Judy's corpse, basically. It's amazing.
Yeah. Judy's corpse. I really wish that someone would just do an entire like Wagnerian Judy cycle. It's like cut to Judy's 30th birthday party. It's like at a 90s drag show. Like the roof literally lights on fire. I mean, I have a lot of ideas.
Because Leslie is like, oh, Judy came out in college, but then she didn't call me, who tried to come out to her when we were on that sleepaway trip in eighth grade. Well, Judy's going to pay again.
I mean, poor Judy. Like every morning she goes out to get the paper and there's another flaming bag of dog shit at the end of the driveway. And she's like, Leslie, we talked about this 100 yards. That's what the paper said.
At this point, Judy's ear is so trained to the whistle of a dart flying through the air that she doesn't even have to look. She can just reach up her hand and catch it while she's yes. still looking down at her magazine. And she's like, okay, Leslie, okay.
I know, it's like some Neo shit every day. She's like, I'm just trying to get a fucking cappuccino. Leslie, talk to my lawyer. My God. Well, I would try to segue into the next song by saying, you know who would be a like perfect person to pitch this project to is Peter Schilling. But I'm not sure that's true. I feel like there would be literally something lost in translation because Peter Schilling is, of course, the creative whatever behind Major Tom parentheses Coming Home. Which is I'm not even sure it's an answer. It's like this expansion on the Major Tom story in David Bowie's Space Oddity.
Yes.
Which is, of course, this fairly dark and actually more and more brilliant the more I listen to it, depiction of the like how man who is literally lost in space because ground control can't get him back, how he comes to accept that he's going to die up there and just become one with all of this space junk and this thing in the universe that is there but unseen.
Yes.
And it's like, it does make the little hairs on your arms stand up just thinking about like the frigidity of space and
yeah,
sound doesn't travel and blah, blah, blah. Peter Schilling first had a German language version of this, and then we're going to hear a clip from the English language version, which is like really this cocaine-fueled, danceable, like, let's request this at area or whatever version of this story in which actually Major Tom, ground control is like, oh yeah, something broke. We fixed it though. It's cool. But Major Tom like already cut his tether and is like swimming towards Mars. And he's like, it's fine guys. I've got this. I'm just going to check some shit out. And ground control's like, bitch, what are you doing? So I don't think Peter Schilling totally understood the point of Major Tom, or he's like, this is super depressing and I'm just going to rewrite it so that Major Tom floating off into space by himself is an affirmative choice and not one of the five stages of grief.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Which would match better with the sound of this song, certainly. And if you've never had the pleasure, here is a clip.
Final message, give my wife my love, then nothing more. Far beneath the ship, the world is mourning, they don't realize he's alive, no one understands. But Major Tom sees now the light commands. This is my home. I'm coming home. Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, coming home.
This song is super cheesy, but I have always loved it since I was little. But I'm interested to hear from you. What do you think happens to this Major Tom? Like, do they think he's dead and he's like, psych, tell my wife I love her, I guess, and then just like swans off to Jupiter? Like, what do you think happens to him in this version?
So, okay.
I think you're overthinking this. Next song.
No, I'm just because I feel like I always try to. I've never known with this song how much of its meaning to lay at the fact that Peter Schilling was a German speaker writing in English.
Right.
So how much of it means it's just like necessarily inscrutable. But let's dive in, shall we?
Yeah.
Standing there alone, the ship is waiting. All systems are go. Are you sure? Control is not convinced, but the computer has the evidence. No need to abort. The countdown starts. Watching in a trance, the crew is certain. Nothing left to chance. All is working, trying to relax up in the cancel. Send me up a drink, jokes Major Tom. The count goes on. And then he's just like falling. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, because he does say across the stratosphere, give my wife my love.
Then nothing more. And then yeah. On the ground, they don't realize he's alive. So, like, is the problem that he's alive and they don't know that and they've just given up and they're like, well, he's dead up there?
Right.
Or is he, like, kind of faking his own death? Be like, give my wife my love. I am going to live among the beautiful Martians I have seen on Star Trek and other television programs. Like, hey, Peter Schilling / your family or your estate. Like, reach out. Tell us what the fuck is going on. If you were just on a lot of drugs, that's a perfectly acceptable answer.
Yeah, I feel like, okay, so at the very end, when everyone on the Earth is mourning, but Major Tom sees, now the light commands, this is my home, I'm coming home. Either he got picked up by aliens or he is going through to the heavenly realm.
Okay.
I feel like it probably is the heavenly realm answer. This isn't Come Sail Away by Styx, where they're literally like, and then aliens came. Let me
right.
hit a high
no,
G.
No, this is like the light that you go to when you're running out of air. Okay.
I think that he's having a transcendence in death. 19th century poetry style.
Okay. Or it's like a Jacob's Ladder thing where this entire story happens, but he actually blew up on the launch pad.
Right. Or like, what is it? The incident at Owl Creek Bridge?
Yes. Ambrose Bierce.
Yes, the guy's been hung and he imagines his escape, but it's just his last electronic impulse before he dies.
Yeah.
Ah.
I have to say, I must recommend that people read more Ambrose Bierce than that, which everybody had to read like in middle school, because he was an amazing war correspondent. And he also went missing and just like Major Tom'd himself in the middle of Mexico somewhere.
Oh, shit. So yeah. See, he was busy playing the circle game is what he was doing.
Yeah, and losing big time. Anyway.
So, any hoodle.
Peter Schilling somewhere is like, you got that tingle.
Oh, I do also want to add, I love that this song has been so prominent in pop culture of late. It was the theme song to Deutschland 83, 86, mm-hmm. and 89, or 83, 86, 89, if you prefer. And it was in that amazing scene from Breaking Bad where they discover, after killing Gail Bedecker, a video of him doing karaoke to this song.
Yes.
And that's brilliant. So I've transcended in another way because of that particular scene. So next we have a song which is in its way perhaps the one of the most pure answer records that we're discussing mm-hmm. today. This is a song called No Pigeons by Sporty Thieves, T-H-I-E-V-Z. Okay. It was a direct response to No Scrubs by TLC, and it is in fact rapped over the instrumental track of No Scrubs, such that the writers of No Scrubs get writing credit on this song. And it is saying, oh, okay, you think guys are scrubs? Well, here's what a woman is who pretends like she has something that she doesn't. She's a pigeon. And I did some research and found out that apparently this is because a woman who is wearing chunky high heels that are too small for her feet has mm-hmm. to walk pigeon-toed in order to stand up in them.
Yeah.
So she's a pigeon. So before we go further, Sarah, here's a clip of the gold-selling top 20 hit, No Pigeons. I don't want no pigeon to be them girls who gets no dubs from me. Playing the bar down broke where the best friends go. Try to holla at me. In front of the club, I see this girl like your love. Thought she said thug, but she called me a scrub. Scrub? What? She must have tucked me a joke. Broke pigeon head freak, you lucky I spoke. This ain't my Benz, this my man's, yeah. But this ain't my car, like that ain't your hair. Uh-oh. Pigeon, take them fake jewels off. Uh-oh. Pigeon, take your French shoes.
This is one of the gentler portions of the song.
Yes, that's
it
correct.
It is so mean. Have we talked about this song before? I feel like we did.
Well, we did a No Scrubs episode years ago, so I'm guessing that yes. somewhere in that episode we must have talked about No Pigeons.
I thought it might have been Unreliable Narrators or like one of those mini seasons we did where it's like people getting in fights on the mic and it's uncomfortable. Anyway, it's really enjoyable, not least because it's got good bones from TLC, but oh my right. God, absolutely scathing. Like every single line is busting on this lady, like her too small shoes, her fake extensions, get a brush and scrub this.
Yeah.
Your pussy ain't worth the Ramada. Like, oh, I mean, I don't think I've listened to the whole thing in a while. And I forgot that it's just like wall to wall PH2. Pissed off at this song and all its implications. And he's like, how dare you say that this isn't my Benz? Like, oh my God. I mean, yeah, brilliant. A pleasure to revisit this and just realize how bitter some people were about getting nailed to the fucking wall by TLC, which yep. they also did. So fair.
In the video, when he says, get a brush and scrub this, the rapper in question helpfully turns around and lowers his pants, revealing his underwear, in case we weren't clear what he meant. This song is goofy and stupid, and I like it.
I like it too, but they're not, especially since like the lead vocalist on this is not good. Like, he's not especially a good rapper, and certainly like just droning and has no sense of key or anything like that. Like, but they think they're the shit, which
that's one of the things that makes it such a fun record, because you're right, it's very amateurish, but they've got confidence.
Yes, they do, which this is exactly what a scrub is, actually. So here's another Moebius of meaning that a scrub's
damn.
Like, no, this is fine. Like, well, I guess, but they, yeah. I mean, they were smart enough to put it over that track, like you said. So
now next, you've already mentioned Sweet Home Alabama by Lynyrd Skynyrd. And of course, if we're doing answer records, we must include this one. Sarah and I agreed before we pulled our own clips that we were going to both jointly select Sweet Home Alabama, because how could you not? It's one of the most famous enduring answer records of all time. It's certainly more famous than the song that it is answering, I would say. Mm-hmm. And Sarah, what are your, do you have any Skinner thoughts?
I'm just wondering how many times a day in college you think you heard this song.
Well, keeping in mind that I went to college in the Southeast.
Yeah.
Let me also even go back a bit further. I remember very clearly there was this guy who had Lynyrd Skynyrd scrawled in magic marker on all of his backpacks, school books. Like, he wrote the Lynyrd Skynyrd, like spelled it out in that sort of weird font everywhere that he could. So,
oh yeah,
I feel like
there were a bunch of kids like that in Jersey even.
Yeah. I feel like I have heard this song at least partially a billion times.
Yeah. If it wasn't this, it was some Almonds. And like, yes. I just, it was just like that, you know, it's just university for you.
And then about 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, when Kid Rock released his song called All Summer Long, which was built on the central guitar riff from Sweet Home Alabama, it was just like even more Sweet Home Alabama coming at you one more time.
Yeah, I'm interested to talk about the song Kwasong a little bit, maybe. But first, let's hear a clip. Not that anyone needs it, but I pulled it, so we're doing it.
I'm Miss Alabama once again, and I think it's a sin. Yes. Well, I heard Mr. Young sing about her. Well, I heard O'Neill put her down. Well, I hope Neil Young will remember. I said that man.
I mean, it's actually quite, leaving aside the somewhat, what's the word I want? Not immature. I'll come back to it. But it's actually quite cleverly constructed to have a bunch of sort of stereotypically Southern flavored melodic aspects to it. That, you know, you have these backup singers that are really letting it rip. Kind of from an borrowed from another genre, but that you do have this, like, you know, rockabilly piano happening and this twangy opener, and that, you know, he's clearly not happy with Neil Young. And it really is such a sort of encapsulation of what, as a non-Southerner, I often find is like, in universe Southern defensiveness about other people's idea of the South. That,
yes.
Like, I'm not really in a, like, I'm from New Jersey, so I have a sort of parallel issue, but it's also like, well, I don't, like, New Jersey contains multitudes, and it doesn't really matter. Like, everybody thinks it's disgusting, so we're free to just live our lives, kind of thing.
Right.
But I think the, I think that this sort of perhaps disproportionate response to a Canadian who everybody thinks is from Missouri anyway,
right?
Like, being like, Southern man, you're like this. Like, I don't know, Lynyrd Skynyrd maybe just don't care. But on the other hand, this song made them a gazillion dollars and is their signature song probably. And so I think that as a sort of text of post-bellum Southern cultures, burden, shall we say, in the larger national consciousness, this is an interesting text. But I absolutely never need to hear it again.
Oh my God. Everything
you said.
Of it.
So tired.
As a Southerner, I feel like you should always be wary of any argument that starts with the person saying as a, but anyway, here I
yes,
am anyway,
of course,
as a Southerner, it is absolutely true what you said. There is an in-universe defensiveness about any outsider making a negative connotation or statement about the South. People get so up in arms about it, literally sometimes. And there is also, there are reams and reams. I swear to God, there are probably 7 billion words on the internet about people saying that this song isn't what you think it means and that Lynyrd Skynyrd isn't who you think they are. And there's just, everybody's always saying that it's more, just, there's just so much noise around everything around these topics. And guess what? Neil Young wrote a song called Southern Man saying that Southerners are racist, and a lot of Southerners are racist. And yes, a lot of other people in the world are racist too, but the South will never be able to escape the fact that it is a place where racism was built into a national charter. And that's just a thing that we have to live with. And there's more to the South than that, but there to say that it isn't part of it is to be willfully naive. So I'm not here to litigate that. What I am here to say is it is not surprising to me that a song with a good hook and a great chorus that is also protesting the so-called liberal elitism of Neil Young is a Southern anthem to this day. I, like you, would like to never have to hear it again. However, that will not be possible for me since I live in the South, and it is so prevalent that I think, well, it's like part of the Alabama state license plate, or it was at least. Like it just, it has diffused so fully. It's like little plastic particles that are in all the water we drink now.
Like microplastics of pop. Yep.
Yes, exactly. So, would I like to get through the rest of my life without ever hearing it again? Yes. Is that possible? No. Do I want to get embroiled in the debate about all of this and song and what it represents? No. But we have to mention it as a response record because it's probably the response record in terms of popularity.
Yeah. And in terms of using, not weaponizing, that's too big a word for this, but using what it sees as Neil Young's like clock on Southerness, incorporating that musically to hit back, and but also sort of certain accusations are not addressed, which is, I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah,
it's interesting to me. And then, you know, we could have a whole season, or, you know, a whole year of seasons on like the, you know, musicality of place, but we're just trying to have fun here, so let's move on.
So let's cleanse our palates with Chapel Heart, a trio of black women from, I believe, Mississippi. Hold on, I'm just going to start back over because I want to get this right. Okay, yes, I'm right. Let's cleanse our palates by talking about You Can Have Him, Jolene, a song by Chapel Heart, a trio of black women from Mississippi who grew up loving country music and have been making it for over a decade now. They rose to prominence on America's Got Talent, where they performed, in fact, this very song. So before we go further, let's hear a clip from Chapel Heart's You Can Have Him, Jolene.
It didn't seem so easy with that broken glass in pieces, and you holding me and saying you were wrong. Well, I'm tired of second chances and these sad-ass circumstances. He's your problem, good luck keeping him home.
Now,
I'm surprised it took this long for this song to be spoken into existence.
Seriously. Well, and I'm also surprised that Kris Kristofferson doesn't get a writing credit, because the verses are the same melody as Me and Bobby McGee, but that's not what we're here to talk about. Jolene has been getting contended with in country music since the moment Dolly Parton wrote the song about her. So many people have written songs that reference Jolene, that seem to be inspired by Jolene. Sugarland did the song Stay, which was like sort of from Jolene's perspective. Then Jennifer Nettles went solo and did a song called That Girl, which is also from Jolene's perspective. Cam wrote a song that we've talked about on the show called Diane, which is kind of also from Jolene's perspective. Just always. Any time that there is ever any song about a woman who is the cheater, or like she, the mistress, she is thought to be a Jolene type character. Like, Jolene, just
she's
that's how
the Mary Magdalene of popular music.
That's exactly right. But like you said, it is kind of surprising to me that it took this long for Jolene's name to appear in a response song. So that's just straight up saying, girl, you can keep him. So this is, song is both a response to Jolene, even though it's still from the it's from the perspective of the same character, but it's a response to Dolly Parton's original. And it's about this woman has now decided, I don't need this scrub, to go back to an earlier song we were mentioning. You can keep him. He's a jerk. And, you know, obviously Chapel Hearts, you can have him, Jolene, will never eclipse Jolene itself in terms of popularity. But I thought it was really worthwhile to mention this here, just to reference the fact that Jolene has been inspiring response records for decades now.
I love that this exists while also feeling like this song is not the best version of itself. And
yes,
it sounds like this song did what Chapel Heart needed it to do for them and their careers and creatively, and that's great. But I kept thinking, ironically, of Dolly's I'm Gone from one of her Bluegrass records, which is like a real barn burner, but it's a little bit slower of a build. And these harmonies from Chapel Heart would work perfectly on that song if they ever chose to cover it. That she's just like, she's getting on a train and she's like throwing a bunch of his shit out of the window as it's leaving. And she's like, and you can keep my ceramic shit. And I don't care what you tell people. Tell them I'm wanted by the FBI, abducted by aliens. I don't care. I left my ring under, you know, the pillow that I also left you, the fancy buckwheat one. Like, it's pretty scathing, but she's just like, I need to leave. And I feel like there was a bit, this is like a bit too, not rushed, but like, this is not quite the time signature that's wanted. It's a little, too, like, there's not enough terrain in it in terms of the volume. I just feel like they're just kind of like all pageant smiles from the jump, which is not exactly what I want from this story. But I was inspired to check out more Chapel Heart because it's like, okay, well, I mean, these are good instruments. These are good building blocks. I just wanted this to be a little bit more thoughtful and less Vaseline teeth. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Like years ago on American Idol, there was a contestant named Brooke White who on Dolly Parton week actually sang Jolene. And through the entire performance, she was smiling like she had Vaseline pageant teeth. And it was so off because Jolene is one of the more desperate songs to have ever been released. And it is not a happy song. And there's something about this, you can have him, Jolene. Also, it's a little too perfect and happy and sunny. Mm-hmm. If this woman is going to travel from the way she is in Jolene to you can have him, Jolene, I need there to be a little bit more grit and edge, because if you're going to explicitly write from the point of view of the same character, you need to act like you musically understand who that character is.
Yeah.
And this song does not sound like it sounds like an easy throw pillow with a sassy slogan on it version of empowerment, where Jolene is much more complex and deserved a more thoughtful sequel.
Yeah. And in fact, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm Gone may be in fact the same character. It's like they, you know, Jolene agreed to retire from the field. This couple patched it up, but you know, in the end, he is a scrub, and the narrator is like, well, you know what? I know we built this life together, but unfortunately that life contains you, so I am stepping onto a train to fucking anywhere. Suck it.
Listeners, if you haven't,
more appropriate.
If you haven't heard it, you should dig back into our archive and find our episode on Lost Dolly Classics, because this is one of the songs that we talk about, and that episode was really fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah.
Well, Sarah, I am glad that we came back to the notion of comebacks to talk about these songs.
Mm-hmm. Me too. And listeners, thank you for coming on this journey with us. The 12 days of Comebackmas are now at an end. But we are on our Discord all the time and on Facebook a lot too. So if you have ideas for future seasons, comeback or answer songs that you want us to talk about in the future, like, we love hearing from you and talking about these things with each other and you. So come on through patreon.com/mastass and, you know, just Google us. We'll pop up like Jolene.
And if you hear a whistle, that means Judy is getting a dart blown at her right now and you should duck.
Oh my God. Someone please do that project, really.
Sugar Mountain, with the barkers and the colored balloons. You can't be 20 on Sugar Mountain, though you're thinking that you're leaving there too soon.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.